Hello and welcome. I am your host, Neil Ward, and I'm grateful that you are taking time out of your day to learn more about design educators' paths to tenure. I truly appreciate it. On this episode of Tell It to Neil, we are chatting with Assistant Professor of Graphic Design, Denise Anderson, from Kane University in Union, New Jersey. Let's listen in. Hi, Denise. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, Neil?
Doing well. Thank you for joining us on Tell It to Neil.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's get started. How did you get into design?
Oh, this was a crooked road to design.
I love it.
So when I went to college, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. So I was really good at sports. So I came in as a phys ed major. And very soon when I got to college, I realized that I didn't want to wear sweatpants every day. So I said, I'm going to become an undeclared major. So what I started to do, then I became a fine arts major because I really enjoyed art. I didn't even know about design at the time, but I really enjoyed creating things. So I just, you know, I went in and applied for a fine art major, was accepted. And then I did 2 years of fine art and I loved it. And then another curve came and I decided to leave college for a semester and open up a Baskin-Robbins ice cream store.
That's a little bit of a zag.
It's a little bit of a zag, but not really. And you'll see that I see that there's a constant theme that has run through my entire professional life. I had worked at a Baskin-Robbins ice cream store when I was in high school, and now I'm in college, and I was decorating the ice cream cakes. And so that was sort of a very creative outlet. The gentleman I worked for, Larry Lawrenson, worked for one of the Baskin-Robbins, and he taught me how to decorate cakes. And I just had such a great experience doing that. And then I was a super scooper. I was making ice cream and sundaes and shakes. And I just really enjoyed the business part of it because then he made me his assistant manager of the store. And so I really, really enjoyed it. Little did I know that this sort of theme would be emerging of design and business that throughout my life. So I'm in college, and I just completed my second year, and now I'm in my third semester. And over the summer, Larry said, "Dee," he said, "you should open up your own Baskin-Robbins." And I said, I'm 20 years old at the time, didn't have a checking account, didn't have a credit card, and I was like, "You know what, Larry? I run your store. I could run my own store." So the short of it is, I applied. There was a Baskin-Robbins. I live in Jersey City. I lived in Jersey City at the time. Baskin-Robbins was opening, and they were looking for a buyer. And it's a franchise. And so I applied and flew up to Boston for a day and applied, and I got it. I got the Baskin-Robbins. They said, "Sure, certainly." And Baskin-Robbins put up half the amount of money to be able to do the venture, and I had to come up with the other half. So the fun part about it, again, this theme of business and design, is that I borrowed $5,000 from like 10 people. One of them was a priest. One of them was like a refrigerator repair person that was trying to hide money through a divorce. My sister and brother-in-law just got married and they had some money, so they lent me some money. And I, 10 people. And my parents, who were my heroes of all time, they put their house up for like the last $15,000. They put their house up in as collateral for a loan that I took out. So I basically took out 100% to buy the business. But once the doors open, I started making ice cream cakes and I started doing very well. So for me, that whole creative part of me started to be fulfilled. And I was doing business, and I loved it. So while I was in Baskin-Robbins, I took just a year off. I think it was a complete year off. And I started going back to school part-time. And when I went back to school part-time, I met someone in the design building, because design and fine arts were together, two instrumental people that to this day have become my amazing mentors in my life, Rose Ganella and Robin Landa. And I met them, and they just came to, my undergrad was at Kane University, and they were so enthusiastic and excited about design that I just sort of, all right, now I'm a design major. I'd like to be design major. So I applied to the program and was accepted. And I had another, I think it was 4 years before I graduated, going part-time in order to finish my undergrad degree. And the funny part of it is 3.5 years into Baskin-Robbins, I wound up selling the business for a couple of reasons. I tried to expand and I couldn't. And I think that there was just another calling in life that I wanted. So I sold the business, came back, I had a year and a summer, and I was totally immersed in the world of design, and I loved it. And that would become the next road that I would travel in my professional career.
So where did you go to for your undergrad?
So I attended Kane College at the time. It wasn't a university. I graduated in the first Bachelor of Fine Art program in visual communications. And again, that's where I said I met Robin Landa and Rose Ganella, and just sort of became a lover of design. And just I just knew that that was my calling at that point. You know, it was just a place that I could be creative. Like, fine art was great. But for me, there wasn't, you know, it's hard to make a living in fine arts. And I know all the fine artists out there are like, no, no way. Like, this is my calling. I could do that. But for me, because I was so much linear in my thinking of business with design, that for me, this was a perfect outlet to be able to do this.
So at what point did you get the calling to be a design educator?
Oh, so that was not for a while. So now I graduated. Okay. I graduated with a BFA in design. And I went out into the professional world for over 20 years. So another interesting path is that I've spent 20 years doing the things that now I teach my students how to do. And I loved professional practice. I worked for a couple of small studios. One really excellent mentor I had along the way was David Breyer. He's now out in the Midwest doing design and branding, DBD International. He was an amazing mentor. He really taught me what it was like to be an art director. And so I did that for maybe about 12 plus years. And then I went to grad school. And I did the program at Pratt Institute in New York City, a Manhattan location, for design management. So again, I was at the point in my career, it was at that time 2001, and 9/11 happened, and I was doing a lot of work. At that point, I was in my own business, my own design company. And at that point, I was doing a lot of work for financial services firms. And you know, anyone that was around doing design at that time knew that how hard the industry got hit. And my client projects, my projects were hit. I really wasn't doing a lot of, I was doing a little bit of work. I had, at that time, 4 people working for me. I had to let 3 of them go. It was a really difficult, challenging time. And I sort of felt the person I was married to was going to grad school. And I sort of found this Pratt Design Management program in Manhattan, and I was like, this is great. I get to do the strategy of business and design. And I figured I needed it at that time to be able to take a break and go and learn something new after being employed for so long and working for people. And I decided this was just a good time. I'm going to capitalize on this period of just sort of the lull in the industry and the lull in my business. And I went back to school. And the program was great because it was there was a couple of full weeks in the program within the 2 years, but mainly it was every other weekend for 2 years. And so that really worked with my work schedule. And that was a really positive and another turning point in my professional life after I graduated from Pratt. So after I graduated in 2004, so business started to pick up again in 2003, 2004. And for some reason I felt like I needed a little bit more. So again, another instrumental person in my professional life, Caroline O'Connell, was the marketing manager for a large financial services firm, Pershing. Pershing is a clearinghouse for a lot of the financial services firms on Wall Street. And she was a department of one. It was one copywriter and Caroline. And Caroline said, Denise, at that point, the department is a little bit bigger. She said, I'd like you to come and be a director of the design department and the fulfillment area. And there was about 11 people. And prior to that, Pershing was my largest client. And so the people that I was working for, now I became their boss. And so I went in.
Oh.
Yeah, that, again, interesting turn. Now not only am I the boss of these people, I'm now working in a large corporation as a director, which was a very senior position in the organization.
That's quite a shift.
That was quite a shift. And I have to tell you, it was a wonderful opportunity and a wonderful job. But while I was there, I really didn't get to do the things that I love to do the most, which was really run projects and the whole big strategy and the branding, because they were very qualified people to do that. And so I felt a little bit lost during those years. And I stayed at Pershing for a year and a half. And then I left the corporate environment. And at that time, I just went back into my own business for a number of years and actually changed my focus. Instead of doing financial services firms, I was now working with entrepreneurs. And I was doing some interesting projects with a lot of people that had some really good ideas. But there was
did those projects kind of feed you a little bit more than the work you were doing in the larger corporation?
Well, it did, because I was a little bit more hands-on with the strategy and the thinking and the creating, which I really missed while I was in corporate. Because even though for many years that I was a owner of my own design firm, that I was always part of the creative process in some respect. I was working with clients, which I loved. I was working with my design team, which I loved. So as part of the strategy, and even though I wasn't implementing a lot of the things, I was still art directing, and I was very much part of that process. And I really enjoyed that. And I enjoyed the business aspect of it, too. But I really missed the creative process working in corporate. So I just knew at that point that I had to make a change and redirect my professional life. But one interesting thing was going on all prior to this that I've failed to mention is for 15 years, maybe like 12 years prior to that, I was always adjuncting a class. So Kane University asked me to return as an adjunct professor, and I taught a number of classes from fundamental courses to type courses, portfolio, the final graphic design portfolio course. I started teaching in the last couple of years I was an adjunct. And so when I went back into professional practice in my own business, I had to take a couple of years off because didn't have to, but I wanted to. My partner and I had a son, Dylan, which I adore, best design project ever. he was born, and I was more like in a freelancing capacity at that point. And when he was five, an opportunity came in at Kane University to teach full time. And I really, at first, was not interested at all. Rose and Robin had approached me and said, we have a full time position. And it was the first full time position Kane had in the design department in, I believe, like 20, 25 years.
Wow.
And it was a tenure track position, and there were a couple of them that were being, I think they had two or three recs at that time. And so, my partner at the time, she had urged me, and she's like, Denise, you've got to try this. This is the most fulfilling part of your professional life, and you should try it. You should do it. And so I did it. I accepted the position. I applied for the position and was accepted into the department. And again, now I'm working with Rose Ganella and Robin Landa as colleagues. They're still my mentors in many respects at that time, but now I'm their colleague as well.
What a dream job.
Well, it was a dream. I mean, yes, the best part, the best part by far is the, you know, is the camaraderie we have here in our department. That's why our program is so great, because we are so committed to student success.
And that's wonderful to see and hear, definitely.
Absolutely.
So let's step back a little bit. So you mentioned that you were adjuncting for a while. So how did you get into that? Did you just like cast a resume out and be like, hey, I want to teach a class? Or were you approached by somebody? Or how did that happen?
Yeah, so my relationship with Rose and Robin had continued outside the classroom. We had lost maybe a little bit of when I had graduated. Maybe just lost a little bit of, you know, time that we weren't in communication. But it always circled back, because it was always like, hey, you know, you want to get involved with the department on doing this, and of course. And, you know, I mentored students, so I would hire students in my design firm as interns or for professional projects. So I always kept in touch with them. And I believe at some point there, I might have been just like, hey, you know, I'd love to teach. And like, hey, we have need. Would you like to come and teach? And sort of that's how it opened up, which, again, was really wonderful. And I really recommend this for anyone that's out there, has a small business, or not only giving back. So, again, having interns or hiring people from maybe your university or local university or a program you may teach in. It's really great for the students, because you're giving them such practical experience outside the classroom. You just can't teach some things in the classroom, and students need to be part of actual projects or, again, the research or the actual execution. And when I had students work for me, they would be designing with my designers, because they had a totally different perspective than most of the professional designers that I work with, and I love that. And, again, to be able to collaborate all together. We had a great system in my design company, Design DMA, is that we would all work on a project together, and then it would be we would meet on the project, and someone would say, all right, this project is most promised, but I want to take it now. So somebody's idea would go to someone else, and another person's idea would go to someone else. So they would be able to work on it sort of in a different perspective, and that was really great, because the end product was always stronger than what we began with. And it was a true collaborative effort in that, you know, everybody owned it. You know, it was a success of everybody. And that really worked for us, and it worked for our clients.
Do you bring that collaborative experience into your classroom now?
Absolutely. The great part, I think, so again, the value that I really bring to the program is my many years of professional practice. A lot of professors or a lot of educators, or specifically design educators, will go the route of a traditional get an MFA, come into the classroom, do your research, teach your students, and that's all great. And we need professors that do that, because they come with this sort of a different academic teaching approach. But my approach really stems from the well of where they will live, where they will actually, their careers are born in professional practice. So that 25 years of working in, not only, you know, as an adjunct, working for design firms, working in corporate America, and managing an in-house department, you know, I bring that to the table every single lesson that I bring into the classroom. And I think that's the value that I could add to my students and to our program here at the university. And that level of professionalism that students are really required to know, that you teach in school, but the bar needs to be set in the classroom to say, hey, listen, you don't submit your project on time, I'll tell you how this is interpreted in the professional world, is that we just had a client pitch, and your work isn't here. Now, the client's sitting in the conference room. We have no work to show them. And so, you know, me as a business owner would say, you know what, maybe you're not the right person for our team. You're fired. And I think that perspective really kind of sets students up for success. even just a little bit more practical knowledge on what it's going to be like when they leave the classroom.
Oh my gosh, I could not agree more. In your when you were out in the field, was there is there a favorite project that you did that you could talk to us about?
So I was thinking about this, and this is really, you know, I enjoyed many projects. I enjoyed, you know, a lot of the projects I did. I'm proud of them. I'm proud of working with the designers that I've worked with. But the one project I remember, it was 7 years into being a designer, 7 years graduating, 7 years graduating being a designer. And I was it was a project for AT&T, and it was a special event that was going on. And at the time, I was working for David Breyer, and David said, you know what, Denise, there's a lot of work going in right now. Why don't you take this and roll? And I remember I was, I figured at that point, I had enough experience. I had worked with, you know, enough illustrators. I'd been on enough photo shoots, had art directed. And I remember this project. I was so proud of it. I was so proud of it. And at that point, I finally felt like I was a designer. And to me, I remember that just that great feeling of feeling that, and even thinking about it today, I remember. Can't even tell you what the project was, but it was a and I remember it had purple and gold on it, and the client was loved it, and David Breyer, who I, you know, admired as a really great art director, still do, he really liked it, and to me, I just felt like a big girl designer, Neil.
I love it. But isn't that funny? Like, I do it myself where I can tell you the color, I can tell you the shape of a box, I can tell you the typography that is on the box, but I cannot tell you the name of the product.
No. It had lightning bolts on it, too. So, hey, you know.
Even better.
Better yet. Every time I see like a summer lightning storm, I'm very excited and memorable, my first big girl project.
So with your time in the industry, both working and being kind of in upper level positions, you must have seen a ton of portfolios and you must have read a ton of cover letters. Talk to us about that. What was your experience with those books and those cover letters? Were they great? Were they not so great?
So, yes, there was. So I have, you know, all right. So I teach the final graphic design portfolio course at the Robert Bush School of Design at Kane University here. That's my job. I've owned that program or sort of, you know, I've run that program for about 8 years now. I was doing it as an adjunct professor. I take it very serious. It's a program that it's just not a course. It is a program where we are helping students transition from the classroom to the professional world. And I think it's, I know it's reflective of all the years of portfolios I have seen, good and bad, strong and weak. And what I'm trying to give our students here is that competitive advantage over everyone else that's graduating. You know, where Kane University is a four-year state college, most of our students are first in their family to go to school. Most of the students in our program and the university are working at least part-time or full-time and going to school full-time. So when these students graduate, they need a job or they need their career to start immediately. They're not traveling to Europe for a summer. They're not backpacking across America. They need a job. And so creating strong portfolios is a priority. And all the assets that go with it, the book that I wrote that came out in 2016, Stand Out, it's all about creating a personal brand, developing killer work, and how to find a job in the industry. And I wrote that book because there was nobody out there that wrote that book. And those are three really important things students need to know. So when you talk about portfolio, yes, that book needs to be a killer book of work directed toward the industry that they want to work. And it doesn't mean projects in that industry. It merely means the passions and the things that the industry, that particular industry, is looking for in a person. So, for example, you know, many of our students at the university here are hired in the health and wellness industry, and they're not necessarily looking for projects that have to do with health and wellness. They are looking for really great stories that communicate an idea, clearly are using the correct touch points, and are, you know, trying to give somebody an experience that is going to get them to stop and look and remember whatever their idea is. And so, and projects in a portfolio that communicate the skills that a student wants to do in the professional world. So if the student's a really great illustrator or has augmented reality knowledge and Maya or certain things, we really try to get that in the book. So when they're looking for work, it's an authentic, true portfolio that communicates what it is that they love to do. And just to go back with the resume and the touch points, you know, I always joke, and I tell my colleagues here, is like 6 months. No, wait, if it's 16 weeks of a semester, it's like 8 weeks of those we're working on a one-sided single-page resume. Because I tell my students that the resume is a test. It's not only a list of qualifications of what you've done. And again, designers have visual portfolios, so that resume just needs to be a quick read, highlighted, but it needs to be designed well. And it needs to have great typography. And the leading needs to be perfect. And the margins need to be consistent. And it overall needs to feel like it's part of their own personal brand identity, which again, the look and feel of their overall portfolio, their business card, which sometimes is the only physical touch point somebody on the other end will see, their website. So again, all those things are really focused in our program, especially at the end, where we're art directing, making sure they're all super right for student to have that edge in the industry. So everybody out there, we're trying to give our students an edge as well as you are.
Absolutely. And go to Amazon and buy that book.
An unshameful plug there.
I try.
Thank you, Neil.
So speaking of that book, there's a lot of educators and academics that do aspire to write a book or maybe have a manuscript ready to go from their research. So can you talk about the publishing process that you went through for Standout?
Yeah, absolutely. So you will have to interview Robin Landa because she is the author of 23 books. And
I would love to.
Yes, absolutely. Your readers, your listeners would love to hear what she has to say. She is such an expert on this, as many things, but this particularly. So how Standout happened is Robin, Rose, and I went to the HOW conference in Boston a few years ago. And we, Robin at the time was working on a book. I'm not quite sure which one. But she was meeting her publisher, or a publisher she had worked with, Nikki McDonald from Peach Pit Press. So we had dinner that night, and I was collecting materials to I was writing materials for my course, for the portfolio course, just as, you know, personal brand, book of work, finding a great design job. And I at the dinner, Robin recommended, "Hey, Denise, pitch Nikki." She's, you know, and I said, "Nikki, I've got this great book idea about portfolio development, and there's nothing out there like this," and she was interested. And so I created a 3-page pitch document, which again, anyone that you pitch, or you could go online, you could find pitch documents in that you're trying to research, you know, what's the idea of the book, what are some, what's maybe the table of content, what is some of the content in the book, maybe a chapter. You know, my book was broken out into 3 sections, and competition books, what's out there. And there could be a bunch of books out there, but if your book has a different spin, then somebody may be interested to pick it up because there's a need in the market, as well as, maybe your interesting spin may be the book that really sells the most. So Nikki was interested. Long story short, they accepted my proposal, going back and forth several times. They accepted my proposal. And so then the hard part came. You had to write the book.
What was the timeline that they gave you for writing the book?
So basically, they at this point, I think they asked me for the timeline. What was the timeline for the book? So the book sort of came in the middle of the end of a spring semester into the summer, and I didn't have time to apply for release time. So I was teaching 3/3 that whole year. So I was teaching 3 courses and. Again, maybe a couple of sections of portfolio, which would be good for the book, but, you know, that's like mentoring. It's like having 18 independent studies, you know, times 2 courses. It took me, I think, 1.5 years to write that book. It was supposed to be due in July, and I got an extension. I had to get an extension to the end of the year, because at that point, I did apply for release time. And so fall 15, I had release time, and that's when the book was done. But the hard part of the book, and not every author decides to do this because Robin doesn't do it, I designed the book myself. Not myself, I wrote the book, but I had a team of people working with me to designing the book and producing the book. So even though I came up with the initial design, I worked with a wonderful woman who was my student at the time, who had just graduated, Margaret Griskowski. And Margaret worked with her. She was my art director. She was such a good art director as a young student graduating, and she was an illustrator. And so I felt like I had to, the book could not be communicated as well as it should be unless it was designed by me. Again, design is really important. Here's the whole part about design and business intersecting, and that in order for the layouts to communicate the well and the work and the information, we needed to design it. So I had at that three student workers and like 3 professionals. A friend of mine who was an art director, a woman I worked with for many years who was my first employee. She was working at it as an independent, but I would write a chapter, and we would talk about the layout, and then everybody would go ahead and do their job, and I would be writing the next chapter. I don't advise this, folks. Write the book and then design it.
All while teaching, too. That sounds like a lot.
All while teaching, and now I have a wonderful, 7-year-old son, which I barely saw. It's not for the faint of heart, folks. You write a book because you need to write a book. Publisher wanted it. It's a great, feather in your cap. Robin, you know, I always say she gives birth to a book every 9 months. she's amazingly prolific. I admire her tremendously for her stealth writing and, but it's not for the faint of heart. But I'm very proud of it, very proud of it. I'm very proud of working with the students I work with. Most of the work in that book is all from Kane graduates. So these are students that I help art direct and launch their careers, and that I'm most proud of that.
It's a really rewarding aspect of being an educator, isn't it?
Absolutely, because it really is all about the students. And I'll tell you the main reason why I became an educator, and it has to really reflect on it reflects in the research projects that I'm even doing now, is that when I graduated, Neil, when I graduated my undergrad degree, I didn't have enough time because I did Baskin-Robbins and I quickly finished school, in a year and a summer, and I there was no time to do internships. There was only time to finish school. And I remember when I graduated, it took me 3 months to find a job. And I know for some that's too long, and others that's not that long, but it was painful. My job, 5 days a week, was looking for a job. And from a woman who owned her own business, and I mean, this was really painful. And I said to myself, in my professional life, if I could ever do something to make that pain less for someone, then that would be very rewarding. And so for me to help direct students, and again, we don't require internship in our program, but it's strongly recommended. Because when students have internships, they come back not only with tremendous experience, they have a new focus in their work, but they also have professional connections. And that is really critical. And if I had that at that time, it would have made that pain a lot less for looking for work or transitioning into my, you know, design life from being a student and from being in, you know, owning a Baskin Robbins.
Yeah, I don't think you're alone in having that gap of time between graduating and finding a job.
That is really painful. So there's a project that I'm working on right now in my research, which I have not, I will be presenting on this. I presented at the UCDA conference, but I'll be presenting it at the Design Management Institute conference in London in August of this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It's called mgcsync.com, and it's this alternate way for students to connect to professionals for internships and jobs. And it really is it's a mobile website. Design is a mobile website. It's all been designed by my students and myself and researched. And the final stage, phase two of it, will be programmed by the Computer Service Department at Kane University in the fall, and it'll be fully launched by next portfolio review, which would be spring 2019. It's really this very robust place where educators, students, alumni, and professionals all come and can meet and collaborate. And it's really for the main purpose of finding internships and jobs. And the information is going to be really heavily data-based, a strong back-end database. And so the information from who got jobs, where they got jobs, when they got jobs, by whom, we'll be able to use that as design educators to be able to sort of sell our program, and as well as being able to improve our program for future generations to come.
Have you thought about franchising that? Because that sounds like an amazing platform.
I'm not really quite sure. So there's two ways. We may decide to make it a public venue, which then will build the code, and then any design institution could use it. That's one strong direction. Or, you know, we may privatize it, but I'm not sure. That's to be determined in the next, by the end of this year. I'll know that. But I would love to be able to give it to everybody that they could use it, because our institution, as many other institutions or many other programs, some programs are really small, so there's not a lot of resources dedicated to it. Some institutions do not have the funding to be able to offer, because there's programs out there, software programs you could buy and do this. But, you know, we truly customize this career tool for designers, by designers, for designers, you know, collaborating with the design industry and design professionals. So more to come.
We'll definitely keep a lookout for it.
Thank you.
I hear that you had just recently gone through tenure and promotion, and I kind of am curious to know how these projects of writing the standout book and the career platform, how did that kind of count for research or service or scholarship or teaching?
So I'm happy to report that last December, my colleague Ed Johnson and I, we received tenure.
Congratulations!
Thank you. So I'm excited and proud, but I do have to tell you, for all those non-tenured people out there, people that are applying for tenure, meaning they're in the process. So now Kane has a process of 6 years, and then you could apply, but when Ed and I were applying for tenure, it was 5 years. So it'd be 5 years, and then you could apply for your sixth year for tenure. So we're lucky. We were grandfathered in under a less period of time. All these things count. I have to tell you, it was sort of, when you're talking about the curves of my professional career. Now, when I had been an adjunct professor, and for all those out there that have been adjunct professors, that is sort of the easiest job. As hard as it is, easy, because basically you're coming in, you're teaching a class, and then you leave. And you don't have to be accountable for any administrative work or advising these students or anything that comes with being an employee of a university or a colleague in a department, design department specifically. So I'm thinking that I would just had like three classes worth of all of that sort of fun, but it's not. You're teaching, we teach 3-3, so we have three courses that we're teaching, and our courses are 6 hours long, which again, many of you are. So we have 6 hour courses plus our office hours and advisement. And the short of it is that there's not a lot of time for research and professional development. So you fit it in. So in the sort of the path of my career, when I turned that corner, I did not see how high that hill was that I had to get over. And so for all the tenure tracked professors out there, you just, first of all, you need to find out what your institution values the most. So we have a provost here that's all about the student. Student success. So what happened is all the things in my portfolio now my written portfolio of the things that I've done, had to be all really focused about students. Now, again, we're all in the design industry. We know how to market well. So it's, you have to market yourself now. And every project or anything I put in my book was for students. So what I was doing a lot of projects with students. Just people in the industry asked for work. I would bring into my identity course projects every semester. So it would be a school or an event or a cause that needed some branding help. So then I started, not only it was about writing things or creating articles or writing books, it became about, here's what I'm doing to give students professional experience. And then I would write up what I did to the students, what the project was about, what's the outcome of the project. And a chunk of my portfolio became about working with students on many different projects. And then on my professional projects, instead of sort of independently doing them or doing them with other colleagues, it was all about bringing the students into the fold. And once that sort of way to market it, then it became like, okay, you're on board, you're doing what we're doing, this is what I value. And then it became just sort of, click and play. And that's how I created my book after 5 years. It's a huge binder of projects that were all for students. And many of them were by students that we all worked together. So again, rewarding, fulfilling, and tenure. So yippee-yay-yo, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what would you recommend for those that have written books, how would you recommend them getting peer-reviewed? Or is the manuscript being accepted by the publisher peer-reviewed?
I mean, come up with a really...
What's your take on that?
Yeah. Come up with a really great idea of a book that people want to read. Get opinions from your colleagues. Get opinions from, your colleagues in your university. But, the design education community is not that big. So... get from other institutions. What do you think? And then go pitch a publisher, and they're certainly going to give you feedback because they know the publishing industry better than anybody. And not only is it books, but there are podcasts and like things you're doing, Neil. This is great. For tenure, unique ways to be able to, bring professionalism to your students or give them exposure, or people in the industry. I mean, there's nothing out there like what you're doing, or very little targeted toward the educators. So come up with a great idea and figure out how to do it. And just do it. Because at some point, ask for forgiveness later. Just do it.
Yes. And sometimes just doing it is so difficult to just start.
But the thing is that you got into design education for a reason. You have a mission and a vision. And where I'm going to take my next road is that I am going to take my love of business, my love of design, and And what students want is something in the area of design entrepreneurship. And we're doing that now here, and I'm sort of, you know, targeting, you know, moving some of my students in that direction, or they want to, and I'm guiding them. But that's what I want to do as a design educator. And I've been very clear coming into the program, this is where I could add the most value and would be the unique differentiator from other institutions. And it's something that our students want and something that our students are already doing. And so, you know, as a proud tenured professor, you know, that's what I'd like to do because that is where I could add value. You know, I'm running the portfolio program until I find someone to transition it to. My eye will always be on that. I feel responsible for the students and want to make sure it's a great program that they're graduating. The MGC Sync is all about helping them transition out there into the world, that they have, again, have successful careers and can collaborate with each other while they're there. You know, you have to really find what your passion is, and you have to stick with it and promote it and get people on board to be supportive. And whether it's a book or a podcast or a student project, they all count toward tenure. As long as your institution thinks those things are important.
Definitely. So what would you say to a design educator that says, well, I'm interested in everything. So how can I focus in on one thing when I'm interested in everything?
You can't focus on everything. You have to treat yourself like your student, or get one of your colleagues to treat like get hostile with the witness. You have to find out what it is that you want to do. You really do. I mean, I'm sure there's many institutions where you could teach a type class and a graphic design for foundation course, and that's great for the program. But what is it as a design educator that you want to do to move forward the industry, to give your students competitive advantage? What is it that you want to do? What's your passion? What gets you waking up every day in the morning? I have been doing this in design for a long time, for decades. I love what I do. I wake up every morning with a renewed interest in doing something slightly different. I never teach the class the same way. Always trying to find new ways to ignite my students' interest. And that keeps me energized. I always tell my students I learn as much from them as I hopefully impart knowledge to them. And it's a great field, but you have to keep moving it forward. It's not a job. It's a career. It's a profession that adds great purpose and meaning, especially to my personal life. I love that I do it. I'm glad, you know, my wife at the time talked me into it. It's a great, you know, it's great for me. It's great for my students.
Well, and that's what I've been finding throughout these interviews for this podcast is the common theme between everyone is we're curious by nature and we want to continue learning. Now, the depths of that learning are, you know, they fluctuate, but it's just a nonstop need to find out how things work or to learn something new.
Absolutely. You know, I just talking about portfolios specifically is that, you know, I was teaching the portfolio course when print books were only it. There were no websites. There was no digital portfolios. You know, it was totally print-based, and that has completely changed. And you know what? Next spring when I teach portfolio again, I'm not quite sure what's going to be out there. But, you know, social media campaigns. Now it's like promoting yourself at a whole other level. It changes, and that's what keeps it so interesting. And enticing and curious, and I love it. No matter what, this is still my profession, and tenured or not, I'm still a designer at heart.
Yes. Well, we're almost at the end of our hour. Are there any parting thoughts that you would like to talk about?
Yeah. You know, life is short and days are long, and you know, love what you do every day. Wake up every day, love what you do, love the people around you. You know, don't go right to the top. Like, there's no reason to get in that elevator and go right to the top floor. The part of the journey, which I love my journey, it's a unique one, and it's my journey, is that along the way, I have done some interesting things and met some wonderful people, and it's the process, it's the journey, that's the reward. Because once you get, you know, now I'm tenured. All right, what happens after that? Now I have to reinvent what that's going to mean for myself and my students. The journey is the reward. And don't forget, you know, don't be afraid to zig and zag. Because at the end, it's really about what gives you purpose and meaning to your day. That's the most rewarding part of life. Period.
Yes, I completely agree.
Thank you, Neil. That's why I like you.
Well, thank you again for spending time with me today to talk about your career path to tenure, and I wish you the best of luck on your upcoming projects.
Thank you, and to everyone out there, I wish you best in luck in your tenure process. Get involved with your people. Rely on the people that have been around for a long time. Reach out to your colleagues. At the end, you know it's the best because, you know, you get to mentor students and you get to see their success, and there's really, like I said, lots of purpose, lots of meaning. And Neil, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.